Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, boys and girls. This is me once again, Wayne Klingman, a.k.a. Mr. Big, with another exciting Radio Free Mafia show. But tonight's not every day Radio Free Mafia show. Today, we bring you probably the best writer when it comes to sports, by far the best writer when it comes to sports books and how they operate, and the long, most interesting, exciting history of sports books in the United States. Therefore, I bring to you, please stand as I introduce the great, the fantastic, the really cool, and fantastically good-looking, Rob Mitch. Good evening, sir.
Mr. Big, thank you for having me.
I'm always happy to bring a man like you on this show. How does this evening find you, sir?
I'm sorry?
How does this evening find you? Pretty good?
Oh, yeah. Doing great. A little windy here in Vegas today. That can upset some things, but I am busy writing for as many as four or five publications. I've got a story I just turned into the Chicago Sun-Times. My assignment plate is full, and it spilleth over, and I got just all kinds of good stuff coming.
That's interesting. I mean, I've read a little about you, and I'm amazed. I mean, let's start at the beginning. What got you interested in writing, and writing about sports in particular?
Well, I was going to be an architect, and my very first semester of college, I remember going into calculus. I had advanced to calculus in my math, and of course with architecture, math is very imperative, and I remember 2 weeks into calculus being flummoxed, not by what the teacher was saying, but what the fellow students were asking the teacher. This calculus had so beguiled me, it just pummeled my brain. At that exact same time, I was taking an introductory composition course, and I remember the first day of that class, the teacher said, okay, I want you all to know the very first rule of writing is, and remember, when you go through high school writing, they're trying to teach you all these lessons, subject, verb, object, all these detailed rules you have to follow. So flash forward to my first day of composition in college. The teacher says the first rule of writing is there are no rules. That night, I went home and kept watching Odd Couple. I've always been a fan of Oscar Madison. And here we are probably, that was 1983. 37 years later, I have been writing for 33 years and a lot of sports writing. I covered UCLA football and basketball throughout the 90s for the Pasadena Star News. That included the UCLA National Hoops Championship in 95, came here to Vegas in October 02 for the Las Vegas Sun to cover UNLV and write features. That was my big immersion into sports betting and the other side of the counter and how the numbers really work, what moves them, what changes them, who does what, the real wise guys, and how it operates. That was just, it's been a fantastic move. I got laid off by the Las Vegas Sun in December 09, which was beautiful because I had been laid off before. I knew the golden rule that getting laid off was not the end of the world, that something good, if not better, was right around the corner. And lo and behold, 1 month later, I was onto the project of my life. I knew the coach very well, so I got a red carpet that season for the, that was the 2010 season for the College of Southern Nevada. That team just happened to have Bryce Harper. He had left Las Vegas High School after his sophomore year to play 1 year of JC ball and then jump into the, hopefully be the number one draft pick in the 2010 MLB draft, which he was by the Nationals. The rest is history. My book is called The Last Natural. It's the inside story of that season that launched him to fame and fortune. And here we are in October, my fourth book came out. It is about sports betting. Sports Betting for Winners is the title. And there's just a bunch of stories in there from veterans and experts and insiders on both sides of the counter about what they've experienced in their lives, betting on different sports, taking bets on the other side of the counter, As we discussed before the show, I'm really happy that there's more than 600 years of combined gambling experience in that book. And that brings me to today, Mr. Pig. So it's been a great career.
It's incredible. I mean, you are a man among men. I mean, I know nothing about sports books. I've never been in one. I look forward to changing that. But I'm amazed how much information there is to learn and how many experts, everybody's an expert on Twitter, are on Twitter that don't know what's going on versus
right.
people like yourself that do. So let's pretend I'm Mr. Big. I'm going to go to my first sports book in Vegas. What are some things I should know and look forward to?
I've got three main rules for you, Mr. Big, and for anybody who's listening who's never been inside a book. Number one, this is primo, circle it three times in gold. Never, ever put money on the counter that you're going to miss. Never, ever. If you can keep that as your golden rule, you're going to be fine. I have been in line before, and I'm not a big timer. I am much more interested into the movement of the lines, what people, the people who bet big, why are they betting big, what is tipping them off, what do they look for. I have been in line before with two $20 bills waiting to bet on a game, and there was a line, maybe five, six people in front of me. The line was moving slowly, and I think 10 minutes later, there was maybe three people in line. That's how slow it was moving. And I was getting perturbed. And I'm sitting there looking at the 220s, and I'm thinking, you know what? I would so much rather put this money in my gas tank. I walked out of that line. I got in my car. I went and got a bite to eat, and I put the $40 into my gas tank. So I will always heed and respect money. I think it's extremely important to respect money. Never, ever consider it monopoly money or dismiss it. Number two on my golden rule of three is when you walk into a sports book, you need to be wearing waders. Those rubber things that go up to your waist when you walk out into the river to fish for salmon or trout or whatever, what have you. When you walk into a sports book, you need to be wearing those waders up to your shoulders because the BS runs thick. It just runs fast, and you hear opinions, and everybody thinks they know everything. There's a lot of BS in there, so be careful. And then rule number three, which is way too pertinent today. I began saying this, my rule of three, when I was doing some interviews, when the book came out in October, Mr. Big. So November and December, this is what I was saying. I was telling people, rule number three, never, ever shake anybody's hand in a sports book. Don't even think about fist bumping them, because I can tell you, my unofficial polling of my last few years, I started doing this a few years ago, when I go into a gents room in the sports book, and I'm sitting there washing my hands afterward, your eyes kind of would stray, and you'd kind of, in the mirror, you'd see peripheral vision, you'd see people coming and going. Unofficial tally of gentlemen who walk out of that restroom without even thinking of looking at the sink is between 66 and 75%. It's that great. Now here we are in the middle of this pandemic, and everybody's hysterical, and you know, here we are, or here I was last fall, and even in recent years, just amazed by how hygiene was just not part of the sports book, how so many in that book were just plain pigs. So be careful when you walk into a sports book in many ways.
Okay, interesting point. We just talked about poor hygiene and what we might want to do to avoid that problem. What are the things? I mean, do they have, obviously, the people that might sell you tips, I'm going to assume that takes place too, right? But what are the things can I expect? I mean, is there like free booze? If I spend money, I get a free drink, get a free meal? Or is it basically buy your ticket, bet your teams, and be on your way?
Well, it's really tightened up in recent years. When I first moved here, you could sit at a video poker bar and you could expect to put $20 in, and right away they'd be at you and, okay, what you want a beer, you want a drink? And by the time you were halfway through that 20, you could make your way through a Corona and very likely have another Corona right there. That was 2003, 2004, up until about 2008, 2009, 2010, and then it really started getting tight. This city has really started watching its bottom line, and it's very difficult now to get any sort of freebies. At the sports book, it used to be a very common thing to get beers and have them serve you. Well, a few years ago, at least they started doing the process of, depending on how much your bet is, that transfers into how many drink tickets you get. Those drink tickets are redeemed for drinks. So the days in the world of freebies are very much extinct. Now, remember, the casinos have been closed for 2 months with all this hysteria. So little by little, they're going to start opening up soon. And I think we're going to just see a whole new world in there. I think there's going to be plastic partitions everywhere. Everybody's going to be distanced. I think it's going to be what I'm trying to convey to you is it has turned into something that's not very fun in recent years. I have to imagine that what we're going to see, this new version, is going to be much less fun. I think it's all going to be very regimented. I think everybody's going to be now just erring on the other side and overreacting and being very careful. Now, the flip side of that is, like I just explained to you, the sports books have been a petri dish and just the center of a lack of hygiene. And so that in itself needed to change. That something needed to happen to alter that, because it's pretty disgusting, as I've explained to you. But we're about to embark on a brave new world, Mr. Big, and it's going to be different, and I'm very interested to see what's going to happen. Yeah. There's going to be a lot of changes, and I think as soon as the first casino opens up, I also write for Gaming Today. I do a weekly column and regular features. I've volunteered to be one of the first people into whatever first casino opens up. So I'll probably be reviewing some section of either a sports book or a casino, and we'll see what beckons in the new world, but it's going to be very different.
It will be very different. I mean, we have in a society now that people like to sue. I can see casinos being careful, because if Joe Bull comes in and 2 weeks later gets the flu, he's going to sue, right? He'll find a lawyer that'll be more than happy to sue, even though he might not have caught the flu from that casino, from the gardener, or from a barber, or from God knows where, his sister's cousin, right? But people be looking to sue, and that will need to be addressed.
The casinos do a very good job of covering themselves. They will cross the X's, they'll dot the I's, and the T's they'll cross. They will be very careful. One thing that has been mentioned, which will be interesting to observe, some people have talked about, it'll be interesting if the casinos now, if some of them or a bunch of them become non-smoking. So that is one thing that has never washed in Nevada, and it's never washed in the casinos. I pick out the sports books that have high ceilings and fantastic ventilation, because I want nothing to do with cigarette smoke. And so there's been a little bit of I don't know what to call it, but a little bit of a wave wondering if, are the casinos all of a sudden going to, you know, be ultra hygienic and not allow cigarettes. I don't believe that. I think they're not going to go that far. But how far they go, we'll see, and I'll be writing about it.
Absolutely, which you need to know, because I myself, I don't care. Secondhand smoke, I understand, is dangerous, but I don't mind it myself. That's my free will choice, right? Other people, if they want to go to a non-smoking casino, if they can find one, go for it. Don't care, right? It's our choices as Americans to pick those things out. But it's nice to know how the casinos are going to do to try to protect themselves and protect the public. Because you're right, some things they could get better on. There's no doubt about that. History shows us that was the problem they had. Well, this hotel that didn't have the sprinklers and caught fire.
Yes, that was the old. That was the first MGM over on Flamingo and the Strip. Yeah, that property is now Bally's. Yeah.
Yeah, and that was an easily to prevent before it happened situation, but yet things happen, It's what we
yes,
do.
That was extremely tragic. You know what the tragedy about that is, Mr. Big? Right across the street, just north of Flamingo, I mean literally across the street from that property, was a firehouse. And nobody had the early gumption or the wisdom to call the firehouse. They wanted to quell it. They wanted to put it out and not disturb the guests. Oh.
Yeah, that's insane. I mean, look, again, no offense meant to Vegas. In my opinion, and this is me as Mr. Big with an opinion, right? You can find some crazy people in casinos, be it in Vegas or what goes on in Milwaukee. You don't have a lot of rational people there. And non-rational people do not make rational decisions.
Yeah.
But this is the way it is. Now, I believe, as you illustrate well, there's a lot of professionals who gamble and make money, make a living, in fact, doing it. There's also a lot of people like I'm a Packer fan or I'm a Bears fan. I'll go there and I'll bet my team because it's my team. I'm going to support my team. Here's my $20, right? And in your opinion, how many professional gamblers are there compared to non-professional, I'm going to pick my favorite home team type?
When you're talking about a professional gambler, you're talking about somebody who makes their living betting on sports, correct?
Absolutely.
That's an incredibly small, narrow roster. The people who can do that and make a living at it year in and year out, that is an extremely small sample size. It is so difficult to beat that number, to beat that spread in the VIG. It's nearly impossible, I would say. I think if you're going to walk into a casino, if it's your first time and you want to bet your favorite team you grew up with, I would be extremely careful because you're slipping right into what the book wants you to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
You aren't being rational. Not you,
no.
But anybody who's doing this. You have got to be cutthroat. And by that, I mean you have to have no favorite teams. Your favorite team has got to be the money that you're going to bet on, and you're going to bet on that team because it's the smart thing to do, because you've done your research, you know the numbers, and you know the edge. And you have a series of reasons why you're making that logical bet. If you're doing it with your heart, man, I'd go outside the casino and go get a pizza or put that money in the gas tank. Bet with your head. Do not bet with your heart. And you have to be cutthroat about it. You have got to be serious. I know, Mr. Big, you're talking about coming here. You've never been here, right? You're talking about visiting for the first time.
Absolutely.
Never, ever get swayed or swooned by the lights. Be a professional. Don't buy into the tourist thing. Don't be a tourist. You've got to treat your money like it's just it's your last buck, it's your last dollars. You've just got to do that for yourself, or else you're looking to have a lighter wallet.
Absolutely. As you said earlier, don't spend the money that you can't afford to lose, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's,
if you're coming out here with $500 and you can afford to lose it and have fun with it, my God, have fun with it. Don't let me rain on your parade for what I'm saying. I'm just talking as someone who has lived here 18 years and has just ultra, ultra discipline. I am so careful when I make a bet. And sometimes it wins and sometimes it loses, but at least I feel like when I go into it, I've done my homework. I like to do my own homework, and I have a reason for doing what I do. If you're coming out here with $1,000 and that's play money, my God, play with it and have fun. Again, I don't want to rain on parades, but when you do make a bet, I think there's a side of me that just wants to convey, just be serious about it and don't buy into the parlays. Don't do tourist stuff. Otherwise, just go to the big wheel and put it on 5-1 or 10-1 or, you know, maybe zero on roulette. And that's okay. That's fun. If you have money to lose and you're not going to mind losing it and you want to just have fun doing it and get a couple drinks and meet some friends and take in the sights and suck in the atmosphere and have a ball, my God, do that.
Yeah,
but if you want to cross the line.
Oh, yeah. you have to know what you're doing. You have to have that plan. You have to have a plan and work the plan, because Mr. Biggs' plan is to find himself a couple well-built redheads, right? Give them both a lot of black chips and have fun, right?
Yeah, I got an address for you, so.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I really, really appreciate that. I mean, that's my idea.
Mr. Biggs, you said the key word, and I want to highlight this. I don't mean to interrupt you, but you said a very key word there. In my book, Sports Betting for Winners, there is one chapter in which I had to give this professional bettor an alias. He took me so deep into his notebooks and his operations and his 30 years of losing almost $250,000 to where recently in the last 5-6 years, he has turned it around. He's become serious, and he's very cutthroat. And so, again, for so many reasons, he's the only person in the book with an alias, but there's a lot to learn. His name is Van Smith in the book, and he talks a lot about when you go into a casino, have a plan, have some sort of plan. Yeah. Think about it in advance. You said it, Mr. Big. That's the four letters, P-L-A-N. Have some sort of plan that maybe you can walk in and you can start your business, and you can diverge. You can be flexible. You can alter it, but have some sort of a plan. Otherwise, you're just burning your money.
And I don't want to burn my money. I mean, I can have fun without burning my money, because if I want to burn my money, I can light a fire with it, right?
Yep.
You know, and we can have fun and have intelligent fun. It's like,
right,
I'm not going to leave an open drink at the bar and walk away from it. Just like I'm not going to walk up and do anything with the girl that wants to come on to me because I'm a fat old man, right? And some girl comes up to me because I'm a fat old man, I think that's trouble, right? I know better, right? I mean, that's stupid.
There's a lot of trouble in this city, as you can imagine.
Yes, very much so. And you can have a lot of fun. I mean, there's no harm in having fun. I mean, I want to go to the D and experience that, because I understand that the guy that runs the D is an absolute, I'm going to use the word saint when it comes to Vegas. He wants to give people coming to his establishment or coming to the Golden Gate a fun time. You know?
This is Derek Stevens. He is Mr. Downtown. He's quickly becoming Mr. Vegas. So Mr. Big needs to meet Mr. Vegas. Derek Stevens is, I understand, he is a cutthroat businessman. When it comes down to the bottom line, he is he's very strict. People like me, people walking into his casino to bet, don't see that side of him, and with good reason. He took over Fitzgerald's and turned it into the D. He bought the Golden Gate. He bought the Las Vegas Club, tore it down, and right now, they are coming to the finishing touches of his grand place called the Circa. It's at a premier block down on the Strip, or on the Fremont, and it's 777 rooms. It is going to have the premier sports book in the city. It's going to be three levels. The big screens are going to be tilted in theater-like. It's going to be something to behold. So Derek Stevens is he's the last of the individual owners, the last of the independent breeds. He's in there with Michael Gaughan, Jackie Gaughan, and Benny Binion. He's kind of the new wave of the old school. And anybody visiting Vegas has got to go downtown first and experience his properties. They are customer friendly. You're going to do well with their player cards as far as reimbursements for how much you bet and how well you do, and the rates are reasonable. You can park there for free, unlike the Strip a few years ago. That's what spread like the plague here in Vegas, is paid parking. I never thought I'd see paid parking, but it came here, and it's just a blight on the city. And the locals, there's so many locals who just don't even think about going to the Strip anymore, because it's a tourist trap. And it's brutal. There's just two basic companies that run the Strip, and both of them are just bloodsuckers. So I find any reason possible to avoid the Strip.
Very good. I remember that. I think it's key that if I'm going to lose my money, because I'm not going to Vegas with any money I don't plan to lose, right? If I'm going to go there and lose my money, I'll have a nice time and not think I've been taken advantage of, right? And that, to me, is key.
Right. Right, and you know, with the changes that are coming, it remains to be seen whether this is going to be fun or not. Because, you know, I saw some schematics with some of the roulette tables where there's going to be spacing and plastic space bars, and I saw a picture from, I believe it was Deadwood today, up in Montana,
right?
And the dealer had all but a hockey mask on. And there was separations at the craps table, and I know people can get used to anything, but boy, oh boy, it just doesn't look fun.
No, it doesn't look fun. It doesn't sound much fun either. I mean, and again, in my opinion, I think once this hysteria of the sphere calms down, I think things will go back to normal. It'll be that time span of taking it from the new now to going back to getting used to things and what needs to stay, what needs to change to the old way, and what should go more forward needs to be adjusted. I'm sure it'll take some time, but let's hope for the best with that. Now,
for sure.
The biggest question I have when it comes to many things with Las Vegas, and these are yourself, you talked about the owner of the D being one of the last old school type of a guy, right? And I think that's an interesting part of Vegas. Especially when you mentioned the number of rooms of his new club, which was 777 rooms, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Now, that number is 21. If we do numerology, that's 21, right?
How much?
Oh, we can go further than that, right? How much of that is based on being lucky? And how much of that numerology is based on trying to get more of the Chinese and Asian market to come to Vegas to gamble, do you think?
Well, you know, there used to be a hotel right at the Strip and Sahara. I don't remember the name of it. It had an Asian theme. Red was a predominant color. And I mean, I don't even think it lasted 2 years. It went belly up, and it was supposed to cater to that audience. And so be careful how you proceed and what you think you can turn into a moneymaker. I think it's
I mean, there's a famous hotel. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. I apologize.
That's right. No, go ahead.
I apologize. I was going to say, back in the day, there was a black-owned casino, right, that went belly up.
Yep.
And that, when you look into that history, did it really go belly up, or was it helped to go belly up? The same thing with the Asian-themed casino. Did it go belly up because they made bad business decisions that happened, or was it helped along? And then we look into the situation when it comes to the visa program, where you have, when you invest a certain amount of money, you can come to the country in that visa and stay here, right? Was that part of a gimmick to take advantage of people from Southeast Asia? Oh, I'll believe that. I'll believe in Vegas. That's what can happen. But that's why you have the gaming commission, right, to prevent those things from happening. Doesn't mean it still doesn't happen.
Yeah, there's a lot of moving parts in that equation, and let me just say that Nevada is still kind of the old wild, wild west in many ways. So things can be done, levers can be pulled, and grease can ease certain things, that's for sure.
Absolutely, and that's fascinating because I feel if I went to Vegas, obviously this is bad neighborhoods in Vegas. It's like this bad neighborhoods in Milwaukee or Chicago, right? I know better to go into, right? But usually, generally speaking, if I follow the rules of knowing where you are, going to the more established places, staying away from the weird neighborhoods, I'm pretty safe. But there's places where it exists today overseas, especially Malta and Cyprus and Greece. We are fucking, excuse me, I didn't mean to swear, you're a fool to go there. You know,
yes.
So Vegas,
yes. I'm just finishing a fantastic book on the mob in Naples, Italy, and it's chilling. It's. I mean, this is in recent years too. We're talking about the takeover of I believe it's the Camorra clan in Naples, and how they just run so much and they're ruthless. And speaking of Asia. it's a blind from Asia into Naples for all the black market goods, and it's just a ruthless book. And so when you talk about you were talking about avoiding certain cities, avoiding certain parts of cities, I'm thinking of I quickly, Mr. Big, thought of Naples and how you can make a wrong turn and just pay for it with your life. Yeah.
Oh yeah. I mean, when you look at I'm fascinated with the history of the map. I was reading a clear note about it. I'm fascinated with gold on overseas when it comes to gambling. When you look at Malta and Cyprus, and you look at the fact that they're offshore casino-type businesses, have over a billion with a B dollars that they really truly really can't account for, how much they're linked with Lebanon, and then, of course, we can take that back to Greece and a certain gaming company there with links to the Soviet Union, I'm sorry, the old Soviet Union, and banks there in that country, in Russia. It scares the hell out of me. I would never go there and gamble. Never.
Well, the connections, you know, if you care to invest your time and stick your nose into it, I don't think we want to come up with certain connections that we would come up with, because just about everything is connected. It's really scary who pulls certain levers, like, you know. So
Nice to write a book. Nice to write a book about. It's nice to watch a show on TLV. You know, maybe it's a fiction show. McMafia was a pretty good one, right? It's the little things that are good, but I don't want to experience it in real life. And it really gets my goat and kind of all sorry, but when I go there, is when you see this company in Southern Europe take over lottery operations in the United States of America, especially in D.C., it's like, okay, don't they know what's going on? They have to know, right? But again, that's what makes part of reading about it interesting and fascinating, because the same sort of crimes that may have happened in the 30s and 20s into the 50s and 60s might be going on today. This is interesting.
Absolutely. Interesting. Yep. The power of the dollar. Boy, the power of money is overwhelming. Yes, sir.
It is. But again, we can go to Vegas, we can go to the D, have a nice time, and have a nice, good, positive experience. You know, tip the waitress too much, whatever we might have fun doing, you know, and go on our way home and know that we had a good time and well worth every dollar spent. Because me, Vegas is still our premier place to go and gamble and have that sort of decadent, fun time.
Yeah, and I hope, I mean, this happened and nobody could do anything against this happening, but I hope Vegas comes out of this as a much more customer friendly city. And I'm pointing fingers directly at the Strip. I hope this makes them pause a bit and rethink some of what their objectives are, because they have to be friendlier. They have to they just have to be more welcoming, which is going to help their bottom line in the long run anyway. So they've really gotten a bad label in recent years. And so I hope that turns around.
As do I, because I think, again, we have Indian gaming casino here in Milwaukee. There's one close to me outside of Chicago. There's a couple of Indiana I could drive to in a couple hours, right? But I still want to appeal to Vegas. You know, I still want to go.
It's got a lot of appeal. I mean, that city, the name of that city, it conjures up a lot of things for a lot of people. Yeah, and there's bright lights and a lot of stuff that you mentioned is going on here. So that hasn't changed too much, but they can improve it and make it better. And it's going to make the whole experience better.
Absolutely.
So hopefully that happens.
100%. Hopefully that happens. I only wish people in Vegas, be it somebody working as a cashier someplace, somebody working on a buffet line or whatever they might be doing in Vegas, the best of all possible worlds, because the better Vegas goes, the better America goes, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
You know, Vegas to me is Elvis Presley and Arne Margaret, right? That's my thought. Elvis Presley and Arne Margaret. More Arne Margaret than Elvis, than Elvis Presley.
I'm a little more old school. I'm a big Sinatra buff, so
there you go.
There's a restaurant on Sahara. It's between the Strip and the freeway. It's called Golden Steer. If anybody ever gets to Vegas, you have to at least once eat at the Golden Steer, because it's a little expensive, but inside to the right is a booth that Dean Martin always sat at and a booth that Frank Sinatra always sat at. And so it's just nice to sit where they likely sat.
Right. I mean, to me, history, to me, is important, right? I'm a big historian. I like to think I am, at least, right? And that makes it more germane to me. I mean, obviously, I want to see the Maya Museum, right, and stuff like that. I do. But I'd like to
Yeah.
see what other hotels might still be around that was around in the 50s and 60s. You know, that means something to me.
Absolutely. Over the weekend, there was a on one of the channels on TV that was serving as my background noise as I was writing. Diamonds Are Forever was on this past weekend, and that happened to be the James Bond show
Still
or
such a,
the movie in which he spent a good deal of time in Las Vegas. There is one scene where he takes his muscle car east on he travels east on Flamingo past the Strip, and it's a scene that I've known about it since I've lived here, and it's just incredible to watch that scene because once he passes east of the Strip, there's nothing but desert. And right now, I mean, there's just buildings and homes and everything, and the contrast is really incredible.
Absolutely. And nice thing too. And I've asked this question because I've never I should have asked this question to Heather Ferris back in the day. Where does Vegas get its water from?
Water?
Yeah.
Well, the main source is Lake Mead, and unbelievably, in the last 6 months, you may have heard reports in the last 10 years about Lake Mead the going
Right, yeah.
shallower and shallower and shallower. You could go out to Lake Mead and you could see the side of the lake. Of course, it's cliffy and it's edgy and craggy, and you could just see the bleached side every year was getting thicker and thicker and just wider and wider. Well, in the past 6 months, there was some good amount of snowfall this winter in the Rockies that has all filtered down, and Lake Mead has actually risen. I don't know what the exact feat is, but Lake Mead is actually going the other way for a change, so that's real good news.
Because water is important when you live in the desert. No doubt about that. Now, going back to our sports betting situation, right? And that sports book, right? In your opinion, if you're going to start to try to be a professional sports gambler and at least break even, if not make money doing so, how much time would it take you to get to that level, sir?
To turn it into a money-making operation, not
Yeah.
necessarily making a living off it, but winning more than I lose.
Winning more than you, so absolutely.
It would be the amount of time that would take is extraordinary. My only parallel I can give you is this past college basketball season for Gaming Today. I wrote an analysis column on college hoops. It's called the Gym Rat, and I was making 4 or 5 picks a week. About 750 words I got for the column, and I'd have to kind of make my explanations, my intro, my picks, the reasoning for the picks, and try to analyze it and give out good reasons. And I mean, the homework that demanded was absolutely incredible. I had some good runs, I had some bad runs. I finished the year 43-40. Now, if
Wow.
you know how the numbers work, if you throw in the vigorish, which is the 10%, obviously here, if you want to win $100, you have to bet $110. If you bet 55, you get 50. There's that 10% vig on the straight bets that you have got to compensate for. So you can look at 43-40, and you can think, "Hey, Rob, you finished in the black. You did all right. You won money." Well, I didn't, because of those 40 losses, you have to throw in the fact that you have to add an additional 10%. So that's not 40 losses. It's actually 44. My actual record was 43-44. I did not make money last year playing college basketball in that column. So and I mean, Mr. Big, it was demanding so much time watching so many games. I would say you have to understand also, if I was gonna, let's just say that there's a full college hoop season coming up this season. Let's say that that's not going to be altered. even though we probably know better. Let's just say the season's going to start unperturbed. I have 33 years under my belt writing sports. Most of that is with college basketball, and that's my background. So you could make a reasonable guess or assessment that maybe at this point in my career and my life, I could try to make a go of it this next college hoop season. And I don't mean make a living. I'm just talking about winning money, finishing in the black. If I were to do that, you have to understand and factor in my 33 years of my career. I've got that going for me. So it's not just like I woke up and wanted to start this clear out of the blue. I've got that history and that experience. My last 18 years, I've been in Vegas, so I've been exposed to a lot of betting patterns and schemes and strategies. So at this point, I could maybe try to make a go of it. And if I get lucky, I could probably win more money than I lost. So I don't know if that answers your question, but I have a whole bunch of experience, and that's what it would take to try to win more than I lose. I would never, ever try to make a go of it, to try to make it my living, to try to pay my expenses and my monthly bills from sports betting. I just wouldn't do it because I know it's not possible.
It's not possible. If I may, it's that same thing. I'm not a poker player, right? I know better, right? I know they're professionals that make money. My challenge to one of the people that talk poker, poker sites and Twitter, is I can make more money than they do playing poker because I have more than poker skills. I have a book.
Yeah.
Right? And the thing is that I don't have to be an expert poker player to write a successful book on that subject. And they don't believe me. We'll see which way wins out. But I'm thinking that a successful gambler, and correct me if I'm wrong, please, because it's more of a question than a statement, that if I'm going to be a successful gambler, I'm going to sell tips on the side. It's going to be, you know, excellent books, and I'll give you my tips.
I'm not going to disagree with you. I'm not going to disagree with you, but, you know, that's not gambling. That's being a tout.
Oh, what's tout? Can you define the term, please?
A tout, T-O-U-T. That means you sell picks.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
I'll wait till you get done. You may before I ask the question.
No, just the tout is someone who's going to sell picks, who's going to think that they know what's going on, and usually a veteran. I know some people who sell picks who are pretty straight up people. However, the average tout is full of crap.
Thank you.
If what they're selling is so good, why do they have to sell it? They're theoretically, they're making their bets. And if they're so good, they're winning money. So why do they need this extra stream of income? Well, they need that extra stream of income because it's something to depend on, because their picks don't win exactly as often as they think they do. So that's something to be very careful of. I do know some people who, maybe if you're having a long run of bad luck, maybe for a month or two, these people could steer you back to get back on your feet. But that's an area that's very cloudy. It's very murky.
Well, I believe that heartbeat, just like stack pickers, is how much is it, the research that you're buying is legit, how much of it is a pump and dump scheme? Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
You have to know what you're getting yourself into. And I'm amazed. Not that I can't. I follow some of them on Facebook. I'm sorry, on Twitter. And some of them are really nice people. Really wonderful human beings. I think they care about the sports that they do picks for. I think they care about players, either those who participate in the sports betting or the players on the field. I think they truly, truly care. But you're right. In my opinion, for what it's worth, the far greater number of those people who are looking for marks who they can sell to.
Yeah, you got to be leery. And if you can just put in your own time and your own homework, the payoff is going to be that much richer, knowing that, you know, you did it your way, you had a plan, you executed, you know what to look for. the big thing now is the in-game wagering, where you can watch a game unfold and it's going a certain way and it goes to a commercial. And during that 90-second commercial, they're going to flash some odds. So do you can the computer in your brain compile what you have just watched and compare that to those numbers flashing on the big board? And can you disseminate a logical bet from those two things and go forward and conquer and fatten your wallet? That's come a long way in recent years. And if you can pull that off, that's kind of next level stuff, where it'll offset some mistakes and it will enrich your experience.
Absolutely. And of course, comes to my sick mind is, if I'm watching the mythical sports book, right, a closed circuit TV that's being run by the sports book, right? I know the technology that I can, I'm going to mispronounce the word. I'm so sorry, because I'm having my stroke voice show up. I'm going to project inside that stream of information slimmer advertising. I'm going to make the wrong decision and capitalize on it.
You mean some hanky-panky between what's happening in real time and a certain delay, maybe?
No, I'm talking about, they know they want you to, they know what's happening. They know if they can predict a little bit ahead of the game what they want you to do, right?
Yes,
That make them pay off. So they'll flash something slowly, right, through frames.
Yes.
That will encourage you to bet something else.
Yes, sir. Mr. Big, it is so important to get accustomed to those numbers. I have sat with professional people before. They look at those numbers different than you and me. They have a knack. They have a way for looking at those numbers and knowing exactly which ones, which games, which numbers and which games are meant to lure Joe Public and to get him into trouble. It looks good, but it's too good to be true. And they sniff it out like it's something to behold in real time when you are sitting with an expert, and they can just sniff that stuff out. There, you get to a point where you don't even the name of the team. You can look at the numbers and know what you should do, how to proceed. There's such an art to it and such a skill, and it takes so much time. It's a difficult proposition, but to be in the midst, in the company of someone like that, it's really special.
It has to be. The amazement of the knowledge that these people must have is awe-inspiring, to say the least. I'm going to switch the subject from the typical sports book into something that may not be truly a sports book, and you can educate me if it's not, is the FanDuel and DraftKings.
Yeah.
Are they more or less, are they sports books and not smart sports books, or what?
Well, I'll tell you what, they're getting pretty popular. They are, as far as the mobile apps are concerned, they are ruling that industry, especially in New Jersey.
Oh, elsewhere too. I can't believe, I live in Wisconsin, and we have Indian gaming campaigns. And I'm told, because I try to get poker, something done with charity poker here, and I was told in no uncertain terms, politely, but in no uncertain terms, that the Indian campaigns were written in such a way that we'd have to amend the state constitution to do anything. So what will happen, from a source that we know, is most likely they'll do it through one of the Indian casinos. One of the tribes will have that, niche, shall we say, right?
Right.
See what happens. Because there's a lot of money, and the governments are going to be really, really short on money. I can't help but believe that every state in the union will have some sort of bet, legalized betting, because they want that tax revenue.
Well, I can tell you that Jay Cornegay, the executive vice president of the Westgate, he runs their race and sports operations. He's been a fantastic source for me, even a friend. He's just been so kind with his access, and he's got a prominent place in my book. He told me just the other day that he thinks within the next couple years, probably there's going to be 40 to 43 total states that will have some form of legalized sports betting. That's quite overwhelming. So it's rampant, and I tell you what, a lot of states are doing it the wrong way. They are arrogant. They don't come out here to Vegas to look behind the curtain to see how it's run, to watch the operations and know how to set it up and know how to become an entity that polices itself better than any other organization could.
Yep.
The only states that have come out here to look at Vegas to see how it's supposed to be done is New Jersey, Indiana, and Colorado. That's it. There are, I believe, 18 states right now that have some form of legalized sports betting, including Nevada. Three states have come here to look. That's four. Four of the 18 have actually stuck their nose in it to see how it should be operated. So when you see, well, we can talk about Illinois. It was just a short, happy life when they were up and running before everything hit the fan. They're not doing it properly, and many people aren't doing it properly because they don't do their homework. And all that's going to achieve is, you know, a whole point of doing this, like you said, is to boost the bottom line of these budget deficits. You want to do it properly. You want to be in tandem with the business. You want to make sure it's a mutually beneficial industry type thing. But when these states, when they boggle it and screw it up like they have, all you're doing is you're continuing Uncle Nate around the corner and the offshores. They are going to continue to do business in your state because you're not doing it right. And the whole, one of the main reasons why you're doing it is to get people to get those dollars away from Uncle Nate and the offshores. Well, when you botch it and you do it improperly, they're just going to continue doing it the way they've been doing it, and you're still going to miss out on those dollars. So why even embark on it? I can't stand politicians. Every day I get older, I hate politics, and I despise politicians.
I have to tell you, sir, reading the Chicago papers, what was going on in Illinois with the betting situation was humorous because I live in Wisconsin, but tragic because I know how much they were ruining the situation in Chicago.
Yep.
And I guess as the Tribune likes to say, the RICO bosses, we pick up people and take them to the courtroom sooner or later because they can't, the politicians in Chicago especially, can't help but putting out their hands to see what money they can pull back in. And that's going to put some of them
in jail. And the joke and the irony of that is if you're in Chicago, you can take a pleasant little drive to Hammond, Indiana, and you can do your business there where they welcome you. And they're going to want your business, and you're going to get compensated and maybe player points and whatnot. You're going to want to keep doing business with there. So it's just almost like, why even do it? Why even take the time? But they just want to gouge the man.
Yes.
They just want to gouge the people.
Because they see it, in my opinion, cities like Chicago, states like Illinois, see a huge deficit they got to fill, and they don't care how they fill it, and they don't understand that people have choices. And one of the things we'll see soon is, I think, with what's happened in Los Angeles today, I think Los Angeles will lose 20,000 people because people can't live in a city that they can't find work in. It's like,
I think that state just needs to secede. Let's just get rid of that state. Let's have it. It can be its own country because it's just they're off their rocker. They're just lunatics.
I have a few good friends that live in Los Angeles, and they'll throw up hands. I don't know what they're gonna do. Anyway, I do thank you for coming on the show. It's been a lot of fun. I know.
Yes, sir.
This again, because I can't
thank
help,
you, Mr. Big.
Help but. Oh no, thank you. Where can we buy your books, please?
You can go to Amazon. It's right there. My last name is M-I-E-C-H, Rob Misch, M-I-E-C-H. Go to Amazon. It's right there. Barnes & Noble online. But the big one is Amazon, and it's they got plenty of them. So if you get it, zip me a note on Twitter, and let me know what you think.
All right, sir. Well, I do. Thank you very much for being on the show. It means a lot. I learned a little bit. I got more questions, and I want to talk about maybe – weird things that happen in the sports industry, especially when it comes to fixing games. I hope to do this soon, but I'll let you go this evening, and you've been a great guest, and I owe you a free hit.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Have a great night.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye. What a great guest. I mean, I've been so blessed by the number of great people I've talked to on this show. I think that Mr. Mitch has probably been up in my top four or five. I've been so blessed to meet him. and especially on Twitter. You know, I'm a big believer in Twitter and asking people, hey, you want to be on the show? Because I think I can learn a lot. I think the people listening to my show can learn a lot. We need people like you on. But I want to thank everybody for listening. And remember, this show tonight was brought to you by Mr. Big Talks Texas Hold'em Poker, which you too can find on Amazon for $2.99. Again, brought to you by Susie. Mr. Big Talks Texas Hold'em Poker, available on Amazon for $2.99. I appreciate everybody listening, and I appreciate people buying my book and the like. And you guys all have a great time, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye.